Good morning, everyone. Now, I've had the opportunity to consult with different people, and it does seem that trying to finish after 1:30 is going to be a problem to everyone whom we have not yet consulted. So I just want to indicate to the whip, Honourable Kalapu, that we may have to stick to 1:30, but start tomorrow at 8:30 and go longer. We did want to go on longer today and make a start with things, but it would appear if the department already has made a change and can't make a repeat performance on the air situation. So that being the case, we have a fresh agenda, but at the beginning and for the record, I would like to thank the Honourable Kalapu for chairing during my absence and leading the committee. Thank you very much, Honourable Kalapu. And also thank you to all the members of the committee for their constructive deliberations and participation during that time. In terms of apologies, we have the Honourable Mantash. She is in fact making very good progress now, and one may even unexpectedly see her at some point too. So we, you know, certainly just hoping that is done and it is resolved effectively. I see that the whip is putting down a few other apologies, and that is because they have to be by email, the apologies, as the Honourable Shivambu from EFF. I'm not sure what the apology is. And the Honourable Albert, I am aware that that is a political apology from the Freedom Front. And that's the apology for that one. We also, then on that note, like to look at the agenda. I am aware that some people raised concerns about starting an hour and a half later than 9:00. And that was my decision, so that I could be more effectively briefed on the work that the Honourable Kalapu and you had undertaken as I would be coming into the chair today. So if it's inconvenienced anyone, my apologies. Yes, you're very welcome, DG, Mr. October. It's great to see you again. Great to see the old faces here. Well, I mean, they are young faces, but long-standing relationship with Naidu and everyone. And on that basis, can we have somebody to propose adoption of this morning's agenda? Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable Grimwolf. Yes, I'm sure, Honourable Grimwolf, you are the pleased at the results of the rugby match against Wales. Yes, I'm glad to see your, country position emerging. Right, thank you. We've got before us, I was briefed on this by the Honourable Carter, and he indicated to me that you had gone through the process of the BRRR, that one or two members have not been there all the time, but as far as the parties are sitting here, you have all been present. It's also confirmed that you were virtually on the point of, I'll take that in a minute, that you were on the point of adoption last week, and it was delayed so that I could also be briefed and the report looked at for any syntactical or any other errors that may be there for the committee to go through this morning. So that position that was given to me. Honourable McPherson. What's wrong here?
Thanks, Jen. I just want to, from the outset, express to you my concern in the manner in which the BRRR process is being conducted this year. It is, in the first instance, be on any ticking box here today. That is what we have flown down here, certainly in my instance, is to come and tick a box on behalf of this department. And I'm extremely uncomfortable in doing just that. Secondly, you will know that the finance minister will be giving his medium-term budget policy statement tomorrow. And it is not possible that he will have had any opportunity or chance to have actually taken into account this committee's concerns or thoughts or suggestions, indeed, for that particular statement that he will make tomorrow. And so I ask, what purposeful or meaningful deliberation can one possibly have today when in the back of my mind I know that this is merely to tick a box and that in fact no one is actually interested in the finance department what we may have to think. And when we find ourselves in the economic position that we are, this committee's deliberations and concerns should be front and center of what the minister says tomorrow. But unfortunately, that will not be the case. Now, receiving a report 19 hours before this committee sits, we received it at 3 o'clock yesterday. You will agree with me that there is no way that one can make meaningful inputs into that report. So I want to place my concerns on the record. I have also placed them in writing, and I would kindly ask if you could respond to my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. Are there any other comments? Right. Let me respond to that. In the first instance, to a certain extent, some of the points that you have raised have been the subject of this committee and other committees for the last 15 odd years. That's something to do with the budget process cycle, the fiscal cycle, the financial year cycle. And it's right from the beginning, from the earliest days of Mr. Manuel, and after that, the view was raised, how do we bring these processes into sync? The current process is far more effective than it's ever been in the past. No, it's not ideal. So let's get that out of the way first. But it is a process that is more effective than it was 5 years ago before this was introduced. Because essentially, what you've got here is we are reviewing the past. Now, the Treasury as well has had these quarterly budget reports for some time, quarterly financials. And when it planned and projected a 3-year process, it utilized that historical information as well as looking at the current economic indicators, the current period, but also the projected period as well. So that a committee reporting to the National Assembly in terms of the section must submit its budgetary and recommendation after the adoption of the appropriation bills, but prior to the report of the medium-term budget policy statement. Effectively, one could argue that this is the latest it's ever taken place, effectively, because the medium-term budget process is coming a little bit earlier than normal. And the thing is that this BRRR review and recommendation must be submitted to the minister and member of the cabinet responsible for the report. And it applies after its adoption by the National Assembly, but prior to the adoption of the reports on the medium-term budget policy statement. This is part of a process. We're in a 2-year term only. What we are commenting on is related to the B previous period. When we look at the annual report, we're looking at that in the light of the latest of the quarterlies. So, arguably, it is certainly not the ideal. But what we have achieved in the last 5 years is the recognition that the B4R is a continuous process. And the first year was extremely difficult. The second, but getting into the third and fourth year, you would have this track on board. And so you find that because of the continuous process, and you've got all the quarterlies, the committee would have exercised this oversight, hopefully, effectively, over the department or the entities. We would have done a lot of work analysis on the quarterlies. And by the way, in this term, and towards the middle of the last term, was the first time that the quarterly financial reports were actually unpacked so extensively by portfolio committees, other than the budget, or now called the appropriations committee itself. The other thing is that it does not actually inform the MTBPS for 20, actually now, you know, the one coming up, as it were, but it may make recommendations for outer years. So looking at this, you're looking at some outer year. It's a projection. But I want to wind up on the comment that I started off with. This is not ideal. And until, in fact, all three spheres of government have the same financial cycle, it won't be ideal. That's the first issue. The second is that we need to get a step ahead. It would seem that the budget office is working more effectively this year for the first time. So it has been able to do analysis. But no, it's not ideal. It's not ideal. But it is a lot better than it's ever been, this process. Because we've looked at, you were here more than I was in this period, and although you may have missed 1 or 2 days, I certainly missed the last section, I think most of you have got a handle on what there is. At the beginning, we learned that there were no funds available. This was raised by you or your party quite seriously and on a number of occasions with respect to a couple of the entities. I remember the NEF issue coming up in the previous term. It was brought to our attention that they needed to get further funding, but that there was no funding yet available, and that Treasury were going to try and review that. And indeed, we hope that that will continue to be the case, because it is the position, when you read your report, that you are taking again. That the DTI, within its global funding, needs to perhaps check what does have available and other entities. The other one, as you know, was the metrology. I think it was metrology, wasn't it, Mr. Herman? That needed, we believe, needed more funding. There isn't the funding from Treasury. But remember, this is a medium-term budget policy. It's a policy statement. It's going to be concretized later on. So indeed, our report is not wasted. But let me read at that point and ask Honourable Hilders for his comments.
I do share your comments around the difficulties in the different budgeting cycles of various spheres of government. However, that doesn't really relate to us receiving the report under consideration today less than 19 hours before we are supposed to consider it. That is the primary objection. We can't really be expected to seriously engage with and consider and read, digest and come with well thought out, well considered proposals in 19 hours, including a night. So, you know, that's really what the core objection is.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hill Lewis. just allow me a minute. I just want to consult with the whip briefly. I'm a whip.
No, I get the it's not necessarily an objection, the concern which is actually raised by two members from TA. I think, well, of course, it's very reasonable. If you think of it, I don't think all of us will be fighting on that. But to me, because we've gone through this process with the department, with the entities here. Some of us were here, some of us were not here. And nobody was not complaining about the press which have there, which I think is something which, as you alluded in your remarks, that the maybe in future the department will have to look at this process so that we effectively make a contribution as parties, and whatever necessary recommendations which allude to progress and change in utilizing the budget. But I think, Chair, I don't know whether we are at a stage where at the moment I thought we'd go through considering it, and then it's up to, because I've indicated, unless I've indicated them correctly, that both honorable saying we must, I don't know whether they propose we continue or we don't continue. I don't know. That's what I'm saying is not clear to me. But I guess I get the argument and the reason and concern for the thing.
Thank you very much. And this is what I'm looking at. So having heard all the comments, I do have your comments, Honourable MacPherson. I want to propose that we start on the report, and as we go halfway through, we look at it, because it may be possible for us to accommodate certain concerns, so I don't want to rule things out at this point, Honourable MacPherson. I think you have put your... Well, just a minute. I've heard your first concern. I'm not sure you want to clarify anything. Is it something someone said?
No, Chair. I mean, the honourable clerk is correct. We're not objecting to the continuing with it. We just want this committee to understand the concerns which clearly the committee agrees with, and that we really need to ensure that this is the last time that we are asked to deal with in this way.
Thank you very much, Honourable MacPherson. Thank you. It is appreciated. So let's work, step by step. Are we all agreed on that point? Right. Okay. So now let's just get one or two things here. This is not going to be about grammar per se or spellings. Anyone who picks up the grammatical issue, unless it's so poor, then it's confusing what the intention is. So then I'll just overcome that. Are we all okay? And you're going to track us right here, aren't you, Ms. Sheldon? All right, let's make a good start. Can you just give me a minute? I'm trying to fill something in for the Chief Whip and Simon. And I know that I'm not concentrating. Just give me a minute, please.
responsible for the budget, but the actual day-to-day functions was performed by involved in the school business.
We could talk about the operational functioning, was transferred immediately, however, the financial resources were transferred on the 1st of April. I think that must be made very clear, okay? In terms of the core functions, the DGI is responsible for overseeing 13 entities and administering 42 acts. These entities can be divided into three categories according to the type of work they perform. And please spell out numbers up to 9, and when you get a double digit, go into it unless it's money. Divide it into T-H-R-E-E. C-1. A number of pieces of legislation are coming to effect or will be doing so in the near future once the Department finalizes their regulations. This will result in the establishment of new entities and councils over the MTEF period. In this regard, the DTI is in the process of establishing the BEE Commission, which will be responsible for monitoring and enforcing the implementation of the Act, etc. And then the ST will reflect effectively from the 1st, 2016, under Program 3, Special Economic Zones and Economic Transformation. In addition, the National Liquor Authority, a unit within the DTI, and the National Gambling Board will be transformed into trading entities within the DTI in line with the policy proposals contained in the draft National Liquor, etc. The policy review document published in 2015-2016. Exactly when was that published? Do you recall the actual document, the draft document? Will you, it'll be verified and checked, shall we? Is that okay? Right. Okay, table 1. I'm not going to list them there. They are a list of entities reporting to DTI, specialist service agencies. There was a time when we talked about the technical agencies. Or is that my memory was skewed? And those were the specialist service. Do we now refer to them as specialist service? This, I mean, that's just, you know, it's like a bit of a fashion, that one. 1.1, mandates of the committee. Section 5, money, bills, procedure, and related matters, etc., requires National Assembly, through its committees, to annually assess the performance of each national department. A committee must submit a report of this assessment known as X. And you know, it's the BRRR report, of course. This overarching purpose is for the committee to make recommendations on the forward use of resources. This becomes an important part because it's related directly to what we're doing. The Act gives effect to Parliament's constitutional power to amend the budget in line with the fiscal framework. Purely as a matter of academic interest, are you aware which provinces passed this particular piece of legislation before national? Anyone aware? That's KZN. Out of kilter, and then had to sort of backstop a wee bit to come into line with national. And then you go on, the committee looks forward in the last sentence, before 1.2, to a fully operational budget office, which will substantively contribute to the budgetary support the committee requires to undertake this process. That is something you may wish to note in your speeches or comments, that until that is fully operational, and we hope it will be now during the course of this next budget year, it is very difficult to take funds away and add them somewhere else, because you have to have a full cost analysis of what you've done or hope to do and how it will affect where you want to put it. And that is something we're working on. The purpose of the VRRR support and simply live that purpose, the method. Your method is outlined there, but looking at this particular one for the period under review, the committee has also been monitoring the performance of SIPC, as well as the company's tribunal, the NVC, the NCR, and the National Regulator for Compulsory Specs on an ongoing basis and for the annual report. In this regard, the committee held meetings with the five entities to engage. The first quarter of the 2015-2016 financial year on 13-14 October 2015. The limitations, that's also important for us. And we hope you will return because we're all for voting. We hope you will return. If I know you're needed now, we need you there and no doubt energy needs your energy. One of the key limitations of the report was not all of the DTI's entities, annual reports and quarterly spending trends were monitored over an 18-month period. And that's what we ought to remember. If in your opinion we've fallen short here, that's what you need to say. Therefore, there was a reliance on the DTI and Auditor General to highlight challenges experienced by the other eight entities. However, all entities, with the exception of NRCS, received unqualified audit opinions. In addition to the timing, of the report, verified second quarter financial and non-financial information was not available. The key challenge was that the DTI and its entities were still in the process of verifying non-financial information, which is due at the end of October each year in compliance with Treasury regulations. You can see again some of the anomalies in the cycle. Do you see that? Therefore, the report has only captured performance up to the first quarter. Right. Outline of the contents of the report. Quite frankly, that is a technical issue merely telling you what is in this report. So far, right. Then we go on to the page 4. I hope everyone's page 4. Fourthly, the report discusses key issues, section 5, section 6. And then you've got 2. Who was involved in the preparation of the report for the committee? Yeah, I see that's 1, 2, and 3. Right, so you bear joint responsibility. Good. Overview of the key relevant policy focus areas. Strategic objectives of the department. There were no changes, all right, from that 2014-2015 year. There they are listed. It is required after the bullets that all government departments align their strategic objectives to the national priorities, government outcomes as outlined in government outcomes. Table 2 provides a representation of this. 2015-2016, the DTI also planned to contribute to outcome 7. It's a new one, you see, for us. Vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities contributing towards food security. For those who aren't yet fully keeping up with international news, food security is the theme next year because it's predicted to be a major crisis. For all as part of its third strategic goal to facilitate broad-based economic participation through targeted interventions to achieve more inclusive growth. And by the way, that word inclusive has got to be on every billboard from Geneva, Amsterdam, Frankfurt, Jerusalem, even the old city, inclusive. So it's now considered as the mantra for anyone trying to govern. linkages between the DEI strategic goals and the government-wide priorities and outcomes. You can read the matrix. Right. We turn over the page. Measurable objectives. You've certainly come a long way, DG, in the last 11 years on these measurable objectives. If you go back to the annual reports and the strategic plans and you look at the measurable objectives today, they are far, far cry, real improvement. The DTI, etc., has listed key interventions. It's planned to continue creating an enabling environment to reindustrialize the country, as it was viewed as a tool through which South Africa can create decent jobs and stimulate economic growth. Industrialization is mainly supported by the DTI through the IPAP. It then gives the key planned interventions that are there. I hope everyone has studied those. I was quite interested to see that last bullet support 950 enterprises approved to participate in the Export Marketing and Investment Assistance Scheme. Is that not new or fairly new, or the numbers, DG?
It's been the extension, but the program is an old one, but as I said, it's been taken on a much larger dimension, especially with our annual trips to China. We would take over 100 companies every year to China and to the new emerging markets. So there's been an expansion in the program over the past few years.
Thank you. Broadening participation. It aims to create opportunities in which Black South Africans and women can participate more in economic activities in terms of the broadening participation, the key interventions it lists. It then looks at the incubator there, approving 90 in the incubator support program. The third part of the DTI's mandate is trade, investment, and exports. And I think, Honourable MacPherson, you were in the WTO where incubators, there's a lot of work done in that area. So I'm sure you'll have to contribute to that in time. Key interventions in terms of trade for the 2013-2014 financial year were two. See, the third part is that when you go for the previous year, the increased manufactured of ship, the third one, conclude trade negotiations, page seven, preferential trade agreements, etc. It then goes to the consumer and corporate regulation mandate and the following key interventions. And then in terms of administration, the following key interventions were listed. Attract, develop, and retain professional and skilled officials, focusing on increasing employment of targeted groups and reducing staff turnover. Thank you, DG. Pay all eligible suppliers within 30 days. We really, really must do that and provide them with some support if they can't comply. Conduct 18 multimedia awareness campaign incentive schemes, film promotion and the like. Monitor the implementation of the service delivery program. The summary of the previous key financial and performance recommendations. If you look at those, you're looking at the 2014-2015. This is very useful for us. What have we been recommending and what has the DTI implemented? You know, it's a time of check. Indicates there. Now, the National Treasury, that's 1, 2, and 3. One was on skills. The other, and also buying local goods, locally manufactured. The other one, the National Credit Regulator. And, you know, how we could increase resources. Well, we can't. Consulting the Minister of Finance to develop mechanisms to verify and enforce public procurement of designated products, so that the 75% of public procurement decision is implemented. I hope that that's gaining traction, because we really need that too. MT has responded. Funds amounting to 30 million were proposed for reprioritization to increase the international footprint, authority. This was raised by the DA several times, your foreign officers, in key markets. It would appear as if some funding has now gone into that. Right, next page, 8. The MCR mandate to expand the National Credit Amendment Act 2014, as effective given the constrained fiscal outlook. The Department of Trade and Industry should reprioritize funds within its existing baseline in order to fund the MCR requirements emanating from. Can we just use the word arising? Emanating has got such a medical flavor to it. Arising from the amended legislation. 2013, 2016, you've got that there, that's very important. Had recommended then, as it came up, that this should happen. The 75%, you see that coming up again and again. Again, number two, the NES, you remember the NES and the need, the venture capital. Yes, Honourable McPherson?
I'd just like to say that was something that, was agreed to by everyone in the last pre-trial process. And sadly to say, I haven't seen or heard a single thing from the department, from either the Minister of Trade and Industry or the Minister of Finance. I mean, it's just like they pretend it doesn't exist. And so it's something that I'm hoping that we'll push on. Coming from this report again to say that we're not going to leave this alone until we get some kind of action, some form of response from both ministers and the departments.
That still has its time to come in. Of course, it was over an MTEF period, but do you want to comment?
I think it's about 2 years ago, that as we know, because of our fiscal position, Cabinet adopted a very clear statement in terms of preserving our economy. We need to act conservatively. So there was no additional budget given, and there was off-cutting in the department. So we also, that's why with regards to the National Empowerment Fund, as you know, they've almost spent all the money that was allocated to them. The decision was then made that we were unlikely to, in the short to medium term, get additional money from the fiscus for the National Empowerment Fund. It was in that decision that the previous Minister of Finance and our Minister said that the IDC and the NEF needs to talk to each other and see whether they should look at the merger, look at potentially becoming a subsidiary of the IDC, and look at some formation around that. I must say that the work is now being completed about what are the options available for ensuring that there is some capital available for black entrepreneurs and black businesses and so on. And about 2 weeks ago, the report was tabled by the IDC and the NEF, because they formed a national treasury. They forwarded that to the Minister of Economic Development and the and our minister. So there is now an interim position which will be taken to cabinet. But basically what it will be is that we will in the short term ensure that the NEF will have access to the IDC's balance sheet and borrowing powers. As you know, the IDC has a big balance sheet, but it also has borrowing powers. It can lend very cheaply in the market and then only lend to business. So they've come to an arrangement. I think the minister will give a full details of that, but basically we will be able to leverage the balance sheet and the buying powers, and therefore the NEF will be able to complete its mandate without access to the fiscus, but using the IEC's balance sheet. So I think there is substantial progress. They completed their work, and I think it's just an indicator they reported to the two ministers. The two ministers will then be taking it to cabinet, and then we could see, in a sense, the incorporation of the IDC as a subsidiary of the IDC, just like CIFA is the Small Enterprise Finance Agency. As you know, CIFA now as a subsidiary and having a strong mother body, it has access to a big balance sheet. And so probably a similar arrangement what emerged from that discussion. Secondly, the Black Lustrous Program, as also one of its basic legs, is the question of the access to finance, and there the DTI is proposing that we have a forum called DFIs, that's the PIC, IEC, Land Bank, CIFA, and DBSA, and we look at basically syndication, pooling of resources to be able to make money available for investment capital without using the fiscus, but using the DFIs.
We will, of course, keep on pursuing that and getting reports from yourself and the Minister. We then have the MISA issue. We had all hoped that it would be some funding that we could try and get for MISA, but that's not the case. The constraints are and remain, and to some degree have been tightened. Then we talk about the development of Black industrialists are directed towards X, the capacity, not towards equity in existing manufacturing projects. Enforcing rigorous governance, 3.2.5, and strengthening internal control measures in all entities. Reporting to him, that's how that goes if you look at the first place. So that we can mitigate, the Minister can mitigate the prevalent practice of irregular expenditure. It's not that he would personally do that, but that I think there would be some kind of measure of tracking and monitoring by the department to just check this out. Consultation with Energy, Minister of Energy, implementing measures such as the facilitation of the development of renewable energy to renew the energy mix and secure more reliable supply of energy. Again, a consultation with the Minister of Finance allocating additional finance to continue supporting manufacturers in their competitiveness in the next financial year after that, because we're now getting into 2016-2017, so that's an out year. Continuing this advocacy, his advocacy efforts to ensure a favourable resolution for South Africa's inclusion. Yes, we learned that AGOA will be going, you know, there would be regular reviews. I think this is still the case, is it not, DG?
Yes, so just to, as we know, the discussions are on the completion for this cycle review, and just to set members at ease. As you know, the issue is now at the technical level in terms of us allowing the chicken imports from the US. And last week there was a meeting of all the vets from the US and South African vets, and they had to go and exchange information to quickly prevent the avian flu and so on. And then I think there was an article in today's paper which people might just get worried about it. But let's say our minister was in discussion last night with Ambassador with Cronin, and then also the technical teams are meeting, they are exchanging information, and they will hopefully, later today, we will be issuing a statement that as we speak, Ambassador Ishmael is busy with the Department of Agriculture to ensure that we meet those veterinary technical deadlines with regards to the exchange of information between the U.S. and some, but there's no need for any alarm. The vets are trying to sort out these technical issues.
Thank you for that explanation, DG. In consultation with the Minister of EG, placing a temporary moratorium. Honestly, we all should really clap hands on this one, on all scrap metal exports, to ensure that this does not compromise the industrialization grant. However, if this is not possible, then to give stronger consideration to more robust monitoring and enforcement measures of scrap metal agents in consultation with the relevant ministers. Now, those are important. They came out of budget in our report that we did. Now we move towards four and the overview of the department's financial and non-financial performance, where there's a intro indicating most of the targets were achieved. You then go to the administration program, which highlights the percentages achieved and performance targets, etc. And the last one, the unsought bullet payment of all eligible creditors were made well within 30 days. So that was achieved. That's really, I think you deserve a pat on the back as government departments go. However, they had not achieved the target of reducing the vacancy rate to 6% by the end of March 2015. The vacancy rate was 8.5. This was the result of the department's inability to fill posts due to the freezing of posts between 2014 and 2015 and the cap on the compensation budget. So in other words, beyond DTI's control, right? Yeah.
As I indicated also, what Treasury in terms of the cost cutting, what they've targeted is not obviously to cut employment in the civil service, but to cut the vacancies.
Yeah.
So every year we're reducing the vacancies. And so on. But just to say that we, last week, in terms of the Department of Labor, they do their annual review of the performance of departments with regards to employment equity. And again, DTI was the best performing national department with regards to having won the prize for in terms of employment equity. So we, I think at the point we have here about 47% women, and as you know, we have the new target of making that 50% in the new financial year, or in the current financial year.
Thank you for the information, Gigi. Yes. You then have the International Trade and Economic Development Program, enhancing South Africa's trade relations. That's captured there under 1, 2, 3, 4 bullets. And the SADC issue, targeted efforts to lobby for the extension. At that time, always look at those numbers, is the target, is the overview and assessment of the department's financial and non-financial performance, targeted efforts to lobby. The progress was made in enhancing this, and didn't we actually achieve that? I'm just wondering how you want to put the last bullet. Do you want to keep it as is? Because we actually got a goer. Am I right? You know.
Yeah. We obviously, I think it's correct, because we put in place substantial resources, as I said, to, I mean, we also employed a Washington-based lobbying firm to assist us with regards to lobbying for this. So, yes, and of course we got the extension of a goer, and so we have been successful there.
That's what I'm suggesting, Gigi, that we indicate for the extension and retention. It has, we've got the slight extensions, but given some kind of going it, isn't this right? I don't know, I'm looking at you. But the issue is, how effectively do we retain this with all the reviews going on? Or do you think that reflects your position?
It's fine, because we've got the 10-year extension. The 10-year ago is now extended for 10 years, and South Africa's money is a part of a goer. Of course, we've got the additional issue of adding this out-of-cycle review. But once we overcome this review, which will be up to the end of this month, then we're in there for the 10 years.
Okay, that takes... sorry, Honourable Kongi?
No, thank you, Honourable President, which I think also we must also correlate with the efforts of the department to make sure that we are having part of our quarantine. Because the other day, I must say, it's Morning Live dedicated 30 minutes of each time on this matter. And also in the 1 o'clock news, he had 30 minutes and what is the spending of South Africa into the whole of our issue. So it's a good work that has been done. So we need as a portfolio committee to say something about that work. Because if you could have looked at the relationships, you know, and people who are campaigning actively, making sure that South Africa is excluded. Yeah, so, I mean, we have followers, and we need to change that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Nkongi. Right, 4.1.3, the BPP, Broadening Participation Programme, was affected by the President's announcement to create the Department of Small Business Development, and the number of the staff and programmes were shifted. We've already made a reference to that. Only aspects related to the BBEE programs and the development of special economic zones remained. this program has achieved the following performance highlights. And that is, you've listed them here, technical feasibility reports, is that right? Yes. Yeah, the 9 proposed FEZs, the Dune Trade Port and KZN, etc. The second bullet, the Maluti Poffing FEZ, the Free State approved. Third bullet, the Department of Parkland, the SIPC, to develop a system that would enable exempted micro enterprises and startups to be issued with BBBE certificates using the SIPC self-service terminals on and online. The system was expected to be fully back functional this year coming, in other words, within the financial year. The phase 1 BBBE codes were gazetted 11th October for 2014 for implementation by the 1st of May 2015. Now, the targets had failed to achieve. The establishment of the BBBE commission was meant to be submitted for approval, was expected to be, not meant, expected to be submitted for approval by the Department of Public Service and Admin and National Treasury, and a report on a phase in operationalization should have been produced. However, by the end of the financial year, the business case had not been approved by the Department of Public Service and Administration. Therefore, there had been a delay in establishing. Therefore, there has been, so currently there has been, a delay in establishing the BBBE commission this year. 20 industrial innovation projects were targeted for support by the Support Program for Industrial Innovation, SPII, while only 7 projects were supported. Furthermore, the value of approved projects was 20 million against a target of 46 million. Could you comment on that, DG?
Yes, the two programs that we have, SPI and SIRP, have been managed outside of the department. SIRP is managed by the National Research Foundation, and SPI has been managed by the Industrial Development Corporation. And what we have decided on to ensure the performance and to ensure that we give full support to these programs, both are being reincorporated back into the department so we can have an active management. And as you mentioned, with our other incentive schemes, we pay out the full amounts every year. We actually have too many applications and resources. So that is how we're dealing with this issue of the slow disbursements and the so on with science and therapy.
The industrial development program is number 4.1.4. You've got the AIS there. 50 projects approved, value 2.7 billion, 1.6 billion investment by McKay Space, is a linked with investment component manufacturer, 800 million rand, 890 million rand plants and plant equipment, 18 sectors and subsectors designated for local procurement. Third bullet, 11 projects approved in oil and gas, automotive, man communications, agro-processing, 48.4 million, contributing to the building of the domestic industrial capability as part of the National Industrial Participation Program, NIP. Fourth bullet, agro-processing investment with investments to the value of 1.2 million, supported by a range of schemes, IMSEP, Manufacturing Investment Program, MIP, and the Enterprise Investment Program, ERP. Fifth bullet, support was provided to 7 companies with an investment value of 18.4 billion with a projection of 6,361 new jobs created under the Business Process Services Program. Could I check with you, DG? I noticed that some of the Business Process Services are located in some ITZ, I'm thinking of Kuka. When we look at business pressure services, are they located in a number of places?
Yeah, I mean they're mainly situated in Cape Town and Gauteng and Johannesburg. But then there are one or two in different IDs and so on. But the bulk of it then now has been shifted to KZN as well. So it's all the main centers that have them. But I think this is a, as I said, it's a good job created. And the real thing is just to try to spread it to some of the other provinces as well. But most of these companies, they prefer those three locations. That's the issue. So that's why in the IDZ, the Kuga Development Corporation assisted to get at least to the Eastern Cape. We have some and so on. But it's really that flock to the either where the market is or where this is where the beauty is. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Gigi. I'm just looking here at 2015-2016 iteration of IPAP had not been tabled in cabinet by March 2015. We are aware of that. I was under the impression it had since been tabled.
It was tabled in April then. It was just a date thing. I think it was just a date issue, yeah. But I mean, I think it was done in time, but probably cabinet cycle, cabinet meetings and so on, but we launched it in the first week of April.
So subsequently it was tabled in the first week of April. Consumer and Corporate Program 4.1.5, you've got it. Sorry, Honourable McPherson, which one point?
Yeah, it was on the MGP point. Look, I think that we acknowledge the importance that this program provides. And I know that through the year we have certainly expressed our concerns about the inability for it to continue to do its good work. And I remember, Gigi, we were talking almost about the phase two that we were going to look at in 2017-2018. And I just think that we need to, when it comes up to conclusions or recommendations, to bring that into that particular point. Because something that we really do need to see is that phase two of the MCP program. And I think, EG, if I'm correct, and please correct if I'm not, you were speaking about a specific focus on financing for smaller businesses, looking at something specific there. So, Chair, if we can just flag that and note that for the conclusions and recommendations.
Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson.
Yes. No, I think thanks for that support of the committee that we try to get the next phase and so on. And as you said, trying to shift the focus to much more labor-intensive activities, to small, medium-sized enterprises, which also have a bigger job multipliers and so on. But really, we welcome the support, and it would be really excellent if we can get the support, because as we know, there's contestation for additional resources. But we think that this is, because this is what we call by not consumption spending, but investment spending. Because we only put in between 15% to 20% of what our entrepreneur puts in. So this is pure investment spending, and it's pure productive, and so on. So I think if there's any program which really creates jobs, adds to the capital stock, generates taxes, it's immediate, because as I said, the money is straight to the private sector to assist, and it goes into productive hands, because it goes directly into entrepreneurs' hands, and they can only use it for capital equipment and machinery. So therefore, it is naturally productive.
Honourable
Hilders. There's a growing international literature which I've been reading in recent months about government support programs aimed at retooling and capital investment, which is basically what the SF is. And it's quite a popular program around the world, obviously. There's a lot of government that do this, but there's a growing literature about whether it is better to only fund businesses which take their business to the very global cutting edge of manufacture and machinery and capital investments. And so the trade-off is, do you help firms simply improve their technology, say, by 10%, or do you spend more money now and help get that firm from where they are, their starting point, to the very cutting edge of where the most competitive firms in that industry are in the rest of the world? And there is growing evidence that it is in fact a better use of money to support those firms get to the very cutting edge and so leapfrog, all of those technological barriers, so to go here right today instead of spending money all along in increment improvements. And so I'd like to get the DG's response on that, on whether they are looking at that trend, and to suggest that it may be useful for the MCFT to do a bit of research to see whether that's not appropriate for the South African program as well.
You certainly are sharing with the committee a very important point that a number of us have heard you're quite right. That's something that we want to look at next year and as we move on. But I'm sure you're aware of this as well, aren't you, GG?
No, thanks. I think that's absolutely correct. What Honourable Lewis is saying is that the old system, as you know, especially in Europe, was, and Eastern Europe, was what is called a subsidy system, where basically the industry, whether it's agriculture or shipbuilding or whatever, they automatically had access to government grants. And then what happened is that whether it is competitive or uncompetitive, doesn't matter, you get it as right. And that is what is called the old industrial policy. The new system is where you obviously try to give it to those who are what they call winners. Those who are expanding, growing in their competitiveness, growing into new markets, and especially being globally competitive. Our system, as you know, we've developed one. We did away with our system of subsidy, which was the guy system, which everybody from wine farms to anybody used to get that scheme to generalize this incentive. So our one is incentive-based, and also you get it on application. And therefore, you must show that you are enhancing your competitiveness, you are engaging new capital equipment and machinery. So our programs are in line with the new thinking. So therefore, we only give it if you're expanding and if you are successful and if you can show there's a competitiveness improvement in your business. So therefore, we cover the winners, because then that's why, as you know, sometimes we reject applications from people if we see they don't meet the criteria. So our criteria is competitiveness improvement, and that's what's called the Manufacturing Competitive Enhancement Program. And also, the only people who apply is those who are expanding. So even that, I think that the entrepreneur takes 80% of the risk before he gets this incentive. And so the rest of the money comes from the private sector banks. So if the bank decides to give somebody money, then at least have some indicator then of future viability. And so, but I think our incentives is in line with the new industrial policy thinking, and the old subsidy system is sort of out.
No, thank you very much, DG. Because I think it probably is something that we should focus on, that rather than an across-the-board approach, let's do something on the targeted approach in this regard. Probably this is the best way, so far it would appear to be so. Thank you, DG. We're moving on to consumer and corporate regulation program. You've got that down there. And various bullet points and so on. The following areas were not achieved. In terms of the number of bills developed by the for the Minister's approval, the company's amendment bill was not developed by the end of the financial year due to the reprioritization of matters for parliamentary program. Due to the reprioritization of matters for the parliamentary program, we're not just Americans, and I hope never, it's program in English. Right. Thank you. Now, the thing is, South African English anyway, yeah. I think I know what you mean. You mean that Parliament has changed its program or something, has reprioritized things. Is that it? That this was affected by the parliamentary program. I do notice that it has affected our committees. Who busted their cross to that little phrase? The three of you jointly crafted a sentence. So quite, thank you. I think could you just You see, in terms of the number of golden cents, the company was not developed by the end of the financial year due to, another way of saying it, which I understand is what this means, the reprioritization of matters for. Who reprioritized it? Was it the DPI? Yeah. See, Washington wasn't too clear whether it was Parliament during the parliamentary change in the programme. We'll clean that up so it's quite clear to everyone, all right? The IT laws, they were not approved and published as planned by the end of the financial year. Now, we don't get any explanation, we just told point blank front. SEZ were gazetted, published for comments, but were not yet approved, they were not implemented. And I just checked with you, DG, are they still out there for comments, or are the comments still being analysed?
As you know, we've got the board now, which has been established, but we received all the comments and we revised the act and so on. As I said, I actually met with lawyers last week, and everything is now complete and incorporated, so it should be issued shortly.
Thank you. Then we look again at the Centre of Development and Admin Programme, and you see it there, tabulated for your benefits, now page 12. The following performance areas were not achieved, and it outlines this very clearly. Some target value. I just hope you're all here, because I don't want to read everything. Are you all on board here? The second bullet, the BPS incentives, supported Stellar 7 projects. In terms of the MSEP, what we've just been discussing, 335 projects approved against a target of 350. Hence, jobs created under this incentive were significantly lower. What I'm hoping is we'll get many explanations against some of these. Perhaps you do. The actual jobs created under this were significantly lower than the target. Only X jobs created against a target of 4-5. And then, let's just stop here for a moment. Gigi, any comment from yourself? Because I understood that the MSEP has done pretty well. But I mean, the BPS 7 instead of 10 and so on and so forth. Was that due to the SEZ issue?
I think the issue here is the question of meeting the employment targets. And as I said, the difficulty here is that you don't have direct control of the employment number. Because you get an application from companies, they apply for the incentive, and like for example, Unilever opened the ice cream plant. There, they're employing 200 people in the actual factory, right? But they will also be increasing the distribution of the magnums. Well, currently they employ about 1,000 vendors who sell the thing. They'll be increasing that to 2,500. The jobs is downstream, but the only thing we can control is to ensure that we quickly approve the application within the incentive and so on. So we actually don't have control of the job numbers, and we can't affect capital labor ratios. That's what the entrepreneur will run the most efficient plant and so on. So I think, as I said, we're going to have to adjust our, given our experience now of the program, we'll have to set more realistic job creation targets. I think that the way you achieve your job targets is more in terms of the sectors you target. So, for example, agro-processing, clothing and textiles is much more labor-intensive than other sectors. So, as you know, we are trying to shift the bias to more labor-intensive sectors. But again, it depends on what applications you get and the market demand for the product that influences the investment and so on. But yeah, but I think that we underachieved on our targets. But I think we will have to say much more realistic about it.
Then there's just on this one, because it's quite important. Yes, Honourable Mkongi?
No, thank you very much, Mr. President. I want to welcome the response from the DG, but I just want to ask two strategic questions in relation to incentives. How do we use incentives to foster transformation? And secondly, how do we use these incentives to meet the required national ambitions or if we say we cannot do this, you know, in the framework of incentives, what is in there that affects us to change our performance?
An instrument
for
transformation.
I think, no, thanks for that question on the committee. I think it's really a very important one, because I think there's obviously two aspects of transformation in our country. The one is we have to diversify the economy and change the structure of our economy from being mainly a commodity, raw material exporter, to a diversified economy with strong manufacturing and services sector. Value-added activity. So that's a transformation that is good for everybody, and it employs more people, and so on. Then secondly is to ensure that we de-racialize the economy, and that you have more black South Africans as the entrepreneurs and as the managers in those companies. So as you know, there's always been our policy that the two must not be conflict with each other. So I think we will have some incentives which is mainly aimed at diversification. But what we are adding now this year, as you know, we are now saying that given the codes of good practice, we are saying that for you to start qualifying for those incentives, you must reach a certain level of black economic empowerment. And we're starting to get people used to this. We started off by telling people, when you apply for the incentive, give us a plan for transformation. And we gave them 3 years in which to do transformation. As from May this year, we're now saying you must be level 4. And we're starting with the MCA program. And so what we're now doing is we say you must transform the economy, that is old manufacturing in South Africa, but we must also now ensure a de-racialization of the economy. What we're also doing is we're now expanding from MSEP. We have an intensive engagement, for example, with the automotive industry, to saying you receive all the incentives now, but you must also contribute to deracialization. So, for example, the manufacturing sector, they're coming up now with a B charter for automotives. Because, as I said, so we are starting to tie the incentives not only to diversification, but also to deregionalization and so on. So I think that's all. But as I said, unfortunately, we should have started this earlier. But as you know, we have opted to err on the side of caution rather than a radical push. But I think the time is now for us to do the second aspect of the transformation and give much more emphasis to it.
Thank you. Can I just do the follow-up and then take your Honourable Mkhongi?
This fellow we've been discussing a lot, and my question is particularly about the automotive. We've been giving a lot of incentives, but what is the end result of that? What will benefit the nation, particularly on our national culture? Much of the deregionalization of our economy is a very important one. So I'm not sure how we're going to capture it. In the report, because going forward, this is what we must look at, because it's fundamental to the radical transformation of the economy. I wrote 2 years ago, the decline nature of economic transformation. But it needs the government that is a developmental state. You see, so I think we need to capture it in the spirit of the report, and we can, as we go forward, be able to assess the road that we have traversed, whether we're succeeding or not succeeding. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you, Honourable Mkhongi. Honourable Hill Lewis.
I just wanted to make a point about that. With the intention, you were in an argument from me, obviously, but the process can cause some trouble for companies. So, for example, there are examples of companies where they applied before you made that new rule. But because the system was taking so long to get an answer back to them, by the time they got an answer, the new rule was in place. And then they were told their application is denied because they haven't met the new rule. But the point that they submitted their documents, there was no such rule. That's the first example. The second example is, company that applies off the rule was in place, so they needed to be level 4 compliant, but before the new BEE codes were in place. So if they were level 4 before, they may now be level 5. So again, they are receiving notices of objection from MSED because they are not level 4, but at the time that they applied, they were level 4. So there's some process issues here that are causing some difficulty because in some cases, even companies receive letters of confirmation, but no contract. By the time the contract came, they have been declined. So we must look at that, DG. We can't cause that confusion to reign as to what is actually in place. My view is that at the time that you apply, the rules that were in place at that time must apply. So if the BEE code at that time made you level 4, then the next time you apply, the new BEE code apply, and so on.
Thank you very much. Do you want to make any comments on both of them that have been made?
I think when we report on the program then, but I do accept that obviously there is the change over period now because we applied it as from 1st of May when the code came to effect. So there's always this the process issues which we have. But I think we, as I said, have asked those companies to appeal, and we will process those appeals and look at that. But what we must be very clear is that we did give people very, very long notice. And secondly, we also really, we gave people many opportunities to become compliant. It's 21 years now of paying out incentives with absolutely no BE requirement. And as I said, I kept saying on every occasion when we had it, we said this was coming. We then gave people 3 years in which to comply. And we upped the stake about 5 years ago or 3 years ago. We said to people, please give us a plan to do BE even 3 years. So we rolled out another few billion every year on the basis of people's plans. But what people then did, because we paid out the incentive within 2 years, they left it and we couldn't check on the BE because then they said, no, we're going to do it the following year. When we give up the final incentive in the second year, they say, sign up, and when we say, where's your BE? They say, we're doing it in year 3. And so on. So companies are also not been playing the game. So as I said, there are some big companies, very powerful companies that are really well competitive, and we've been helping them for 10 years with incentives, and now they are saying, and I said to them, this is the, unfortunately, you should really have been level 4 with the amount of support you got. But as I said, there are some genuine cases, I think, which we will try to help companies.
Before I move, I want to go to the 4.2.1, the admin program, reported that all eligible creditors were paid within 30 days. That's where I was, and we just stopped for a minute. And I think that's really good. Thank you very much. The International Trade and Economic Development Program. Sorry, Honourable Coggy.
No, I know that we need to finish the thing, but there are things that must not be left hanging. Yeah? Is that right?
Yes. I think that the point you made needs to come in the conclusion. That's what we were saying.
Yes, I agree, Chairperson, but I want to raise one thing here. That if the department should turn these companies, because it was telling them to continue to do this, but they waste an awful time lobbying to fight the information. When you come with new codes, they use a lot of money lobbying analysts, lobbying media, lobbying everyone. You know, that they must fight. And when they lose that level, and then we want the process to be opened. And it runs there to have the state works. And we're not going to finish our job if all the time, when we close the today, and then it must be opened because people are wasting time lobbying against our coaches.
Look, we captured the sufficient points in this area. On the one side, this delay needs to be addressed. And I think the DG has indicated there are some genuine cases. However, many after 15 years of pleading and 21 years of democracy, they have not come to the party. So it's on this particular area of where we have been for the last 20 minutes, no. The canoe point.
Chair, we need to be careful when we use emotive language, that we must just tell people that they must not bother doing anything. That borders on dictatorship when we take away people's abilities to exercise their constitutional rights, to lobby governments, make their voices heard, whether we agree with them or disagree with them.
I totally agree, that's what I'm saying.
We must just be careful how we walk down that road,
because
we don't want to,
dictatorships. Nobody is going to do that. What I think the issue is a question of perspective. How much do we spend on lobbying? How much do we spend on expenses? How much do we spend on that? And that's a reasonable position. So it's not a question of no lobbying, no this, but rather, how do we balance that expenditure so that the constitutional priority come to the fore? But let us just go on to this Wellness I 13 on the top of the page. You know, international trade and economic development program, if anything, DG, we need to spend a wee bit more time in the future on this. Trade is definitely becoming somewhat of a Cinderella in our time allocation, and we must try and ensure we track this a lot better. But there we are, and you find the talk about the status of progress. There's the agreement to implement the grant component of the Cuba package was the last international thing. Well, I must say that is disappointing that it took, I think, 4 years to do, or 3 years, that took so long. 4.2.3, special economic zones and economic transformation. This appears to be gaining traction. Milestone of five-pack industrialists created and sectors not met. Okay, as the policy documents and guidelines to approve applications had not been approved at the time. However, the DTI noted that 70 applications had been received in this regard and were being assessed in accordance with existing departmental financial instructions, due diligence criteria for viability. To some extent, you referred to this DG in other areas. You highlighted further progress made in the program, which we noted it was even reflected in the introduction in this area, and the amount of money is simply added per se. What is interesting is you note the SED Advisory Board held its inaugural meeting in June 2015. And then you go on to 424, the industrial program has five performance targets. It achieved two of its three first quarter milestones. It had not tabled an IPAP, that's been referred to and commented on. And then we come to page 14. The progress being made, there's a blow-by-blow reference to IPAP here. Following progress noted, the solo photovoltaic system components, the instruction note on the creation of a rebate provision for electricity meters was issued through the Government Gazette by International Trade Administration Commission of South Africa. Right? Then SANIC, the aerospace industry support initiative supported three aerospace companies with development of new technologies to the commercialization stage. 4.2.5, the Consumer and Corporate Regulation Program, it indicates here that, the Deputy Director was appointed to do certain things which had been required. In spite of this, though, some of the progress was made. Liquor and gambling policy were both published for comment. Is comment concluded on that more or less, DG?
Yes, it is concluded and it will be all be taken to the Gambling and Liquor Council on the 30th next week of October, and then it will be tabled in calendar 2nd of November. The cycle, yes. So we get clearance hopefully from the company, from the National Council, and then it will be proceeding. Yeah.
And thank you very much. To come back to that, Regulation 45, the National Credit Act, which aims to set maximum fees, interest rates, and service fees that can be levied as mandatory, produced and published. Something we've been arguing for many years. The National Lotteries Commission was launched. Subsequent to the amended Lotteries Act being assented to by the President and proclaimed in April 2014, the regulations came into operation, though, a year later. Incentive Development and Admin Program. This is a huge program. They're covering many issues. For the first quarter, this program met 11 of its quarterly milestones. The Performance Per Incentive Program is tabled. Is provided in table 4, just like us to check that. Alright, if I look at table 4, the top of the critical ones here on page 15, and looking at the value of projected investments, the potential job supporters, actual, in this kind of case, Aditi, when do we get, you do the projection, when do we take the final actual, say, in terms of jobs. So we project the coming years of a financial year and when we finally get that actual figure of jobs. Are we able to give some period?
When we compile the annual report and that is when we get all the information about our expenditure and also the meeting of performance targets. And then, as you know, we give a report of saying this was our performance targets. We achieved 80% or 90% of the performance targets. So we do that performance review on an annual basis, and then we do that. So I think that's how it comes in.
Yeah. So I think we just look at that, given also your explanation, so a VPS there, a film and TV, as to how we can... track that little lot later on in 6 months or so and see what is achieved there on the next annual report. Human resources. We have already referred to this, DG, the human resources. We then go on to page 16, which is financial performance. Many of you would have studied this expenditure as a percentage of the final appropriation. And you look at that there now. It is looking at, I think, foreign governments and international organizations was 81, and the other one, machinery and equipment, 70. Perhaps that's, and then you're looking at that coming under that, that may be possibly a comment, as you've got on there just to do, and foreign governments. I know foreign governments comes up repeatedly, it's something to do with their cycle. Reconciliation, we were told, 1 year. But is there any fresh information on SDG?
Or was something to the downstream for this year, oh, yes.
Because I know they have slightly different cycle, and you yourself have been, I think, in the foreign, in that embassy, and are aware of those issues. We then have 16, 17 transfers. A huge amount that's transferred to the different entities. And then the CETA, of course, will be the last time that transfer will go through. Right. The expenditure by program, and if you look at that, what are we looking at in that direction in that particular financial year, the variance, you're well within the 10%. Industrial development's done particularly well, as has the ITAC, or the International Trade and Economic Development, and also, of course, incentives. Trade and investment South Africa, a little bit higher, and the administration. With respect to administration, which has got a somewhat higher variance than the others, is there any reason for that, DG, specifically? You have alluded to a number of others already. That's if something comes to mind, you can just indicate it. this moves to page 18, it then lists this, and that is to ease our own assistance as a committee. Before we go on to page 19, expenditure by program of the 30th of June, very precise there. Issues raised during deliberations. Internal constraints as contributing factors rather than only external factors as an impediment to growth, economic growth. A view was expressed in the committee that the DTI focused purely on, and then you go on to that, reference to President Zuma, what he had to say, ease of doing business, which often came up in the committee, recent surveys would suggest that South Africa is slipping down the ranks as a preferred investment, etc., giving certain comments here. And then you have the minister informed the committee that according to business day, etc., he then repeated that using one of the examples was Unilever and the trading partners, China among them. And then you had an additional measure to be considered by DTI to insulate South Africa against the impact of the current global economic slowdown. Notwithstanding the IPAC and other measures, etc., the committee inquired, whether the DTI has considered other measures to mitigate against the impact of slowdown, etc., of the global economy. The minister informed the committee that evidence suggests that the manufacturing sector is capable of driving a new growth path. The structural changes to the economy must continue, as we cannot rely on being exporters of primary mineral commodities only. And years on in that area, in many ways, this is information he has shared on many occasions and expressed in this committee. Going down to that the state must adopt an approach of critical support for sectors and develop a sectoral program that would contribute to economic growth and job creation. And that is a mantra that has been repeated endlessly. We go on to the perceived contradictions between IPAC and the NDP. The minister indicated that in his opinion no such contradiction exists and that the IPAC was moving in the same direction as the NDP. And he then pointed out what IPAC had, the initiatives that contributed to manufacturing sector, the textile industry. Although the minister accepts that there may be different political concepts and ideological positions with respect to IPAC and the NDP, he is of the view that these policy documents encourage private and public sector involvement in the economy. The state should provide a supporting and enabling environment for the manufacturing sector, which has been achieved since the launch of IPAC. He then goes on to the Bowman Centres and the impact, the South African trade relationship with the United States, which we had highlighted because of the AGOA's, the AGOA not agreeable in the sense it was simply a decision taken by the US, including South Africa. State the steel industry, which we all remain concerned about. Performance of the Enterprise and Investment Program, and then the geographical indicator status of Rooibos tea. Well, let's see, I should hope it's still being called Rooibos. Investment prospects for Saldanha Valley Industrial Development Zone. As part of its oversight, the committee visited Saldanha Valley RDZ, the committee inquired how many investors were in the pipeline of IDZ, but each time noted that there, and not that had shown interest as a result of Operation Kisa initiatives, the Transnet National Ports Authority announced an investment of $9.6 billion to enhance the deep water port ability to service the offshore oil and gas industry. Now, in particular, by the way, these oil rigs will really bring in funds to that Saldanha IDZ. That's big money. financial and non-financial control measures and entities, the perceived lack of consequence is associated, the perceived lack of consequences associated with poor financial management and transgressions. The committee was of the view that it appears that no action is being taken against the poor financial and non-financial performance of entities. The committee inquires in as to the measures considered by the DPI to address them. Concerns? Do we get a comment from DPI on these, or perhaps you'd like to comment, DG?
To take action against entities not acting, I think, as you know, the DPI received a clean audit and a number of entities received a clean audit. But what was really, I think, our minister was told at the event that he meets regularly, quarterly, with his department, with all the entities, and goes through the Auditor General's report, with the Auditor General also being there, and then, and he, as I said, he insists absolutely that there's no excuses tolerated for non-compliance. I think if you take all our entities, we get summoned here, but as I said, any transgression of entities, we dismissed CEOs, in entities, we don't renew contracts for people that don't perform. If we receive a forensic report about malpractices, we take immediate action of suspension and so on. So I just think that we actually are very active in these consequences. We have zero tolerance for fraud in the department. We suspend people on the same day if there's an allegation of fraud. So I just think that the question of no consequences doesn't apply to the department. So I really would suggest that. If anything, we probably, but I don't think so. In terms of the PFM, I'm forced to act against any fraud, corruption, and so on. And as you know, sometimes when we deal with a commissioner, when we deal with commissioners, NCC, CIPC, we have to suspend people because that was the recommendation of the report. So I just think that our minister is very tough on this. And it also, when if you come with technical excuses, he says it's fine, but just listen to what the AG says. And he just says that we must comply with the AG and doesn't accept our explanations.
Yeah, I'm looking to the committee myself and mentioning some comment here because that's not my own experience. Honourable and Comey.
I just want to maybe to correct, or because you are typing that the minister has taken disciplinary action when there are allegations of financial conduct. I don't think that is right. Yeah, when they finish contacting you, can't be, if you can.
Yes, when there is misconduct. Okay, right. I just want to point out that certainly off the cuff I'm aware of three issues that the DPI took extremely seriously as soon as it became aware that there were these anomalies arising. All of us remember the issue with NCC, National Consumer Commission. We all remember SIPC. The action taken there, very serious action. We all remember the action taken with respect to the gambling board. And it did seem like several publishers were experiencing a similar sort of thing. And I think for us, the challenge became not that the DPI wasn't acting, but that we were engaging these people as a committee, and we didn't come across this problem. And we had to ask ourselves, and I say to this before I left, what are the questions that we are not asking? What is missing here? And on our own analysis, we realized repeatedly it related to minor, it started off with minor good governance infringements. Minor. Perhaps a bit of a lack of leadership here and there, which we thought, well, that's okay because it's not a qualified audit. I think the mistake is to see an unqualified audit as a clean situation. It is actually telling us this is in really good shape. However, look deeper if you want to check on full good governance and challenges. And our responsibility as a committee, everyone sitting here, is not to have to wait for whistleblower. That's a long time. That's a post-mortem exercise. Let's try and develop a deeper analysis, a sharper analysis, and our own instruments. What do we look for? It often reminds me of the Enron issue, where no one could see anything wrong. You know, and we must become sharper. We've had a number of lessons, but what I must say, and what I have been drafting here, however, the DG, I can't even read my own writing, pointed out that there were that the department and the minister conducted regular engagements with the entities, and when these anomalies became apparent, prompt action was taken, which often led to disciplinary and even suspension, and even, in fact, you have actually brought in criminal element, what's it, the Hawkshaw, forensic. Yeah, so that we need to put that in, because we have become aware of that ourselves, that the such action was taken, but we need really to make sure we become alerted ourselves to the sooner and our own analytical abilities deeper. Because sometimes we've done oversight over these and had a look. And I sometimes wonder if our oversight is not OVERSITE. Let's develop some sharper instruments. Right, and then we go to financial and non-financial performance on page 23. The MCC. From what I read here, and let me look at that, the issue that is still left over from the earlier challenges is the issue of having, you know, strategically qualified people in the right position, and that still seems to be a problem here, other than them not approving. They have been, you note that, 24, page 24, you pick that up there. You know, on the non-financial here, memorandums of understanding for 24, one of the things they seem to have really tried to address was the motor industry and some of the challenges there at the bottom of page 24, and we need to pursue that with them. Page 25, the good practice there, Commissioner, in terms of reference to the opt-out register. Not all planned consumer awareness or business workshops were held. We really need to make people more aware of what the MDC is doing, and they need to integrate and work even more closely with the publishers. It would be helpful. So the posts have come up here, and you note that they do still have a number of critical posts need to be created. You see, that's what worried me, DG. A number of critical posts on page 25, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th line from the bottom or 3rd line from the table. A number of critical posts need to be created within the organizational structure, including inspectors, investigators, researchers, and legal experts. Now, I think this was the position we came to, and I'm not sure just where we can go with that with such a constrained fiscal position. The next thing on page 26, the financial performance. Now, getting that grant. And towards the end of the table, the MCCs have accumulated. How many MCCs have we got? After the table on page 26, are running around, you know. But one, isn't it? Had accumulated irregular expenditure, which had been condoned. This was mainly due to the continuation of contracts, which had been identified by the AC since 2011-2012. You remember the debate called those who were here during that period? They related to non-compliance with present regulations. The problem with the AG report, another problem, is one of the things you have to take into account, it keeps on carrying things until, you know, they were lost. Is that not correct, GD? I don't know.
Yes, I mean, that's, as I said, unfortunately, one of the issues in which we reported that the previous commissioner entered into a range of unlawful contracts. One of them was the lease. And this one, so you have a fire, you had a very long-term lease. So every payment in subsequent of that irregular expenditure is, as I said, but as you know, we refused, as a director general, I refused to grant that money to the NCC, claiming, of the PFMA, but, because I knew the lease was irregular. But as you know, we were cracked over the knuckles by people who say we have to help the NCC with the holding funds from and so on. So those are the things. We do take action, but we get forced to act sometimes. But this is the illegal expenditure, the lease that was fraudulently entered into.
Yes, colleagues, I mean, you all remember that,
members,
those who were here at the time. And it became a day of reckoning for all of us. Leases. Measures to prevent future. And there is noted the measures that were taken. The reliability of performance information submitted to the auditor general. Again, reliability coming into that information. You see the ICT. You see that there. We focused on the ICT. And that this has proved to be an impediment here and there to the effective delivery. The state for the contractor responsible for the IT information technology systems. And, you know, I think, as you notice here in the conclusion, EG, the committee's view is that all these ICT, right across the board, we've got to get some, you know, there's got to be some real biggest action taken here to expedite the resolution that you have already developed in this regard. Process on page 20, on 30 actually, where we did 29, we're now on, hang on, we're not on 29, top of 29, process and dealing with complaints. A non-referral generally relates to matters that fall outside the jurisdiction of the NCC, and often this is related to matters that should be with the NCR. The significant increases of certain operational expenditure, the process of restructuring, the NCC informed the committee that it is in the process of organizational restructuring, it's dealing with the posts there. And on the last point, which is pertinent, the NCC informed the committee that the filling of critical funded posts are essential and that the process of restructuring will be tailored to the requirements of the NCC. We hope that that is expedited, DG, you know, with the NCC. The National Credit Regulator. Members would have seen very quickly before we opened, you had two recommendations. One of them concerned the NCR, and that is related to the capping on the insurance, which has come up repeatedly over the last 5 years, and is to a large extent linked to part of the mandate as finance health in this regard. So I indicated to staff members, when we put it in the conclusion, we need to ensure we have effectively capture this from the body. I'm just going to ask you, Mr. Hurling, if you, Sheldon, if you, as soon as we come to those parts, will they be in red overhead or what? So just alert us when we're getting there so that we can cross-reference. Alright, the effort by the NCC is here to promote the development of an accessible credit market, particularly to address the needs of historically disadvantaged persons, low-income persons and rural communities. Then you go on to page 30, where the reference is to non-financial performance. The issues that the committee raised and that the NCR itself identified are noted here. In terms of the achievements and project cards and all of that, and working with other departments in this regard. The NCR has had 13 performance targets, of which 11 were reported to be achieved or exceeded. The remaining two were partially achieved. These were three workshops, etc. Okay, and the next bullet, study to review the current levels of the cost of credit was only partly achieved. We hope that this will be done by March. If possible, are we expecting it then, do you think, DG?
Yes, it should be done by then, but as you know, the question of fixing or reducing the interest caps, as you know, obviously, given the current work with the financial services sector, we have been in intense engagement with them to ensure that they can deal with the caps and the cuts we're going to put in interest rates, which will obviously affect their profitability and so on. So, but as I said, we are trying to reach an accommodation with them. We had a few interactions with some of the big banks and some of the smaller banks, which, as you know, are quite vulnerable at the moment. But I think it will be definitely finalized before the end of the year.
We made a reference at the bottom here on page 30, and charging unreasonable credit life insurance. I mean, it's repeatedly raised that a number of people are already carrying life, and they are forced to take out a fresh life policy. And that's illegal. You can't force someone to take out another life policy. But it's not very clear in the work we're doing, and we have tackled this along the way. On page 31...
There's much more vigorous stopping and clamping down on those things. And as you know, we have some big ones, big retailers that we've now raided, and we've taken action against him for transgressions of our law.
We must do it for every sector, you know. Borrowers must become more responsible and lenders must become more responsible. 31. Then we have the four planned investigations were conducted. The non-achievement was due to credit providers not cooperating and supplying the required information. Summons were issued to non-cooperative credit providers. I really think this is unnecessary and that they should be taken to task by their own peers, whoever they are in that community, you know, of business. Due to budget constraints, the term of reference to appoint an external service provider to investigate two credit bureaus were not adopted. Management decided to conduct these investigations internally instead. We understand that one takes other measures when faced with a budget constraint. Let's see how that's working out. We'll back that one. Human resources we've referred to across the board, and this particular one, they have repeatedly indicated that they do find challenges in attracting the right kind of talent and also in retaining. And I don't know if this is purely a financial issue or what, but we may need to pursue that as well. Financial performance at the bottom. You refer again on page 31 to the, the insurance that we hope we're tracking it all along. And page 32, the amount is 4 million rand higher, the expenditure than it's targeted. expenditure within a 5% variance of the targeted amount is generally accepted as minimal. Therefore, variances greater than this are discussed below. The NPR highlighted that it faced a funding challenge, which affected a number of areas. It did receive an unqualified audit opinion with no findings, and no material findings in terms of usefulness, etc. But let's look at the financial performance when it indicates that there were some challenges and overexpenditure in some regard. The second paragraph at the bottom of the page, it spent 23.3 million, 6.2% overspending, which they attributed mainly to timing differences when invoices were received in relation to when these were budgeted for, to when, could you just sort of, on a technical basis, DG, try and explain this, not the specific instance. And you were all here listening at the time, so no doubt you're all fully aware of what went on. I'm looking at all of you, including yourself, Father Lani, researcher.
If I remember correctly, the NPR had budgeted more than they actually paid out. I think they explained that in terms of saying in the first quarter their expenditure is less than budgeted for, because they were services that were supposed to be procured and paid for in the first quarter. However, those services, even though they've been provided, they have not received the invoice to be able to pay out from the service provider. Thank you.
I think we ought to encourage service providers to provide these invoices soon, you know, properly. You then have the ICP, we've referred to ICP, the status of the credit market, their annual targets, etc. And then you go to 35, the bottom, NRCS. The NRCS, we noticed there in conclusion that the committee did welcome that the department had agreed on changing the wording of the LOA, but let's get there. Page 37, the Auditor General's finding. Now they got this qualified audit for the second time running for the same point, the levies. The technical aspects of the levies, which we were then informed are on track to being resolved. 38. 39, letters of authority. That came up, and we now learn in the last sentence of that point, the processing time for LOA application process may be reduced to 120 calendar days as opposed to 120 business days. I think that is an improvement. Honourable Macklin?
Chad, I mean, I would differ with you on the definition or idea of an improvement, because the reality is that the problem still persists. You're aware of it. I sent you an email. Show how companies are now retrenching workers because they just cannot afford the administration times that they are having to financially carry. So I don't see any room for celebration in the word improvement while people are losing their jobs because of Brexit. It's really just as simple as that. And while we understand that we need to protect South African consumer, it can't be at the expense of job creation. It simply can't be. Because, you know, all you've got is protected unemployed people in reality. So I think that this issue is far from being resolved and really needs to be, you know, challenged vigorously and the department can't keep telling us, the NRCS can't keep telling us, well, we're looking at these things. They've been looking at this for the last year, and we don't have an improved system. At least our recognized concerns and their desire to create more jobs in this economy.
I think the point is taken, but I would also add, while we don't want to compromise jobs, we don't want to compromise people's safety either. We need to look at all aspects of this, really. DG?
But we also don't want to compromise growth. You see, in terms of growth, as we know, it's consumption, investment, and then X minus Y, exports minus imports. Now, for us to have a proper regulatory system to regulate imports cannot be bad for growth. And all we're doing here is we are stopping imports, and we say those imports, if they come in, must comply fully with South African standards, because, as I said, we are trying to produce these things locally. So I can't see how doing thoroughly your imports, as you can see, many countries stop. As soon as we have an ostrich problem on one farm in South Africa, or we have a black spot on one orange, they just stop our exports. So why can we not have the right to stop the illegal export and imports?
I believe this was one area that the committee was into. It may have been the one that we were away, but we can't go back. You were there last week. I'm not looking for a response. Honourable MacPherson. No, you can comment as it's coming up further. ICT challenges facing the NRDS. NRDS. Honourable MacPherson, please don't conduct or attempt to conduct a conversation. If this occurred on the day you were here, I am aware you were away one day. I don't think it was more than one day, but this was disgusting. So, and I take those issues from staff as well as people put in charge to check. ICT challenges facing the NRCS, that I think includes because the NRCS informed the committee that the finding with respect to the ICT was in relation to the LOA process, inspections and financial data. Can you just brief me on that, please, Ms. Sheldon? Who did this? Who did this paragraph?
Was a result of the engagement that we had with the NRCS, and that's the response to the issues that were raised.
Certain measures are being put in place, such as increased bandwidth to facilitate LOA application process. And they go on about it. So now the ICT aspect in relation to LOA, and I understand the DG, is being bumped up or improved.
As I said, we have limited resources, and if we're going to allocate resources, I do it more to those things which encourage exports. And just to facilitate other people's export imports, I don't think, as I said, we are doing it, and we will do it, but within our resources and within our time.
With respect to moving to processes to prevent fruitless and irregular expenditure, the AG highlighted the challenges there. And the NRCS indicated it had conducted investigations in that regard. That issue of the audit finding on the levies, which is two audit reports now, there was an assurance that they would be able to resolve that this year. The AG conceded that it was a technicality, but would have to be resolved. The Companies and Intellectual Property Commission. CIPSI's functions are noted, page 41. The non-financial performance. You notice the targets of turnaround times there, which have been quite a challenge. Only 41 of the planned 46, or is it 49, self-service terminals have been installed and were operational. Four terminals were operational were not operational as the wire device for one terminal located in the reception area of the JSE was not connected. And the Department of Home Affairs connectivity for three terminals located at the Industrial Development Corporation Center had not been finalized. So this is in relation to the partnership with these other entities or entities and a department, and is likely to come online soon. But what they've done, of course, one of it. Non-financial performance, it then goes on 60 targets in T13. A couple that they haven't achieved then, a few of them, let's refer to that on page 42. Two milestones have not been met. Less than 75% on page 42 are currently measured service delivery standards met the target. And there has been underperformance in the areas of online company registration and online director changes due to system. And system, I assume, is not the ICT. I'm looking at the GD here, but that's what we were told previously. Only 70% of the positions were filled against the quarterly target of 72% due to the moratorium on recruitment. I just want to come to the acting commissioner at the bottom. Advocates Fuller also noted that SIPSI had been left with key leadership positions not filled with dedicated staff after the 2014-2015 year. These were the positions of the commissioner, the chief financial officer, and the divisional manager, compliance, risk governance, etc. However, the acting commissioner noted, and this is very important, that labour relations have stabilised during the first quarter of the 2015-2016 year. I think that that is very welcome, and I think the committee should welcome that, because this has been an ongoing challenge. So we should welcome that, which the committee welcomes, because it's gone on and on and now slowly stabilising. Labour concerns are being addressed through an external facilitator. The moratoriums are being listed to specific critical positions on a case-by-case basis in consultation with organized labor. Hooray for consultation. So we likely see a continued labor stability there in that workplace. Work stability anyway. Financial performance, you're looking at it there. I'd like to just look at the irregular and wasteful expenditure, page 43. The bottom, 2.4 million in irregular, while 3.3 million, page 44, was approved for condonement by either the executive or accounting authorities. SIPSI had incurred wasteful expenditure of 23,000 in the earlier financial year. This was due to interest on the late payment of supplier. That incurred 1.4 million in wasteful, which was mainly due to an ICT license reinstatement. Right. Planned capital. So planned, but not contracted. So planned a couple, they had not a number, but they were not. Auditor General's report. The one for us to look at, management had not, the second paragraph under the AG, adequately addressed the deficiencies relating to performance information to ensure that performance information was supported by reliable evidence through the corrective action that they had implemented. In addition, sufficient controls had not been implemented to ensure the source documentation contained certain pertinent information to support actual achievement. As you will see, when you unpack that, a lot of this has to do with the ICT, which is in the conclusion. You go on to page 45, 46, and Companies Tribunal, page 46. company tribunal established in particular with who, page 47, its strategic objectives noted, non-financial performance, and then the target areas it had not met. 80% of decisions and orders were issued within 30 working days after the hearing. The target was 85%, it met 80%. 40% of cases were finalized in the terms of the alternative dispute resolution instead of 60. At the hearing date, for some cases had not been finalized during pending negotiation. We must just make note of that. Only one research report against a target of two had been produced and signed off. A seminar on understanding the role of the tribunal was hosted, a report had not yet been finalized. Well, I think the first one, 80 out of 85, okay, but 40% as opposed to 60, there is a need for us to look into that next year, or as we proceed. You then go to page 48. The human resources, we've already noticed. In fact, when they came here, it's the position the minister lady gave us is that as this grows, so will staff allocation grow. Page 49, page 50. Now, on page 50, if I'm not mistaken, Honourable McPherson, you have something to add. Can you read it off under what point? It will be a new point. Page 50. Is it? I'm looking down. Is this yours? Is it?
Yeah.
All right. Let's just go back. It was 6.1. The committee acknowledged the internal challenges. 6.2. The committee welcomed the department's commitment to continuous improvement, etc. 6.3. Right. A new 6.3, I take it. Can you read that, please, Honourable McPherson?
The committee noted the importance of the NSEP and urged the Minister, it should be the Minister of Trade and Industry, to consult with the Minister of Finance to upscale this program over the outer years of the NGEF period.
Now, I do think that that is important, don't you, DGEF? And thank you very much to yourself, Honourable McPherson, for including it. We've got here the committee upcoming, Honourable Incombe. The committee welcomed the decision of the DTI. This is something I thought we should have. Do you recall that? Where you indicate in DG, we may not have phrased it properly, but in the job issue, you have an incentive or whatever here, and then what happens is the actual company says this is the target jobs that will be created. That's what you take. Of course, it can take longer to achieve the downstream, and I understood you. Now, we may not have done this correctly. The committee welcomed the decision. It's not so much the DTI. You're not putting the target. It's the company's giving you this target, is it not?
Although we have to put it in. I think that the wording is fine. The DTI has to set the target, even though we don't have control over it, but I think
review its downstream job creation targets for the NSEP and other incentives to ensure these are more realistic. All right? With Honourable Kogi.
Yeah, and then we get a just, I don't know, that 6.4,
we're on 6.4, just going in 6.5.
Yeah, immediately after that, you can just go down one line.
Then after reviewing that.
And then you say, however, or the committee is of the firm view that the department should use incentives as an instrument to foster transformation of the economy. Full stop. The department should disperse incentives to companies and entities that show.
Slow down.
Okay.
It's of the firm view that ETI should
use incentives. Yes. To foster transformation.
Of the transformation.
Of the economy.
Of the economy. Well, I
Thank you. If I understand, I mean, something like the IMSA program, the department does not make funds available to companies that do not meet EE requirements and specific levels, am I correct, Eugene?
Okay.
So, what I'm saying is that the IMSA, if you apply for funding, you have to meet EEE requirements as legislated, all right? You can't just go and get funds under the bond if you don't meet specific levels. So, as far as I'm just...
The only time we've now applied this for the MSA, as I said, is very recent. We've just applied that you must be level 4. It's very new. But I think the general point is a correct one, that we are moving towards trying to use our incentives. And as I said, we started with NSIP. I think the point is that one should use the incentives for both transformations.
So my point is that is now happening already. And that's what I was saying, that it's not something that we are magically coming up with now. It is in fact something that the department is really engaged in.
Well, I put it this way, it wasn't happening at the beginning of this financial period. That is the issue. We may want to qualify and indicate that, we certainly only recently, because this is the fact, it's the last couple of months, in fact. It hasn't been the whole period. The committee welcomes the information from the DG that recently companies are including, it's only now that companies are. In fact, it wasn't in the beginning of the year, it was only August, September, so it's not... Yeah. So I think let's make this very clear. Honourable Williams, you've been so quiet.
Chairperson. I agree with Honourable Mpongi. We must remember that transformation isn't just about BEE, which is... we've also got to look at transformation of companies with regard to control, not just ownership. So I think that his point he made about transformation is very important. Thank you, Chair.
We're not taking his point up, but just to qualify it, that yes, they are meeting it now, but it hasn't been the whole case during this period. And we need to make that quite clear as well. So it's really only recently that companies are expected to meet all up to level 4. Is that right, then, GG, for the MSA? Now it is actually in. And in fact, during this period, others got it, while they haven't met that. It is of the firm view that the DTI should use incentives as an instrument to foster transformation of the economy. Now, the only question I have for the committee is, do we try to link some of the MSAs together or leave them separately? I'd rather hear from yourself, Honourable Colasso, on this.
But sir, I think if we come to once here the issue is the transformation or digital transformation of the economy. If we capture that, I think the general application to all programs of the department, because the department is about transformation of the economy, developing and growing the economy, job creation. So it will apply to all programs. I don't think there will be a program which is immune from that approach.
I understand you, Honourable Blanco. You're saying this issue of using incentives as an instrument to foster transformation should apply broadly beyond NSEP. I'm just hearing you now. And so, Honourable Kongi, we may want to just pull that out about the transformation and the incentives, and notice in its, on its own somewhere there. Okay. Yes, can you come?
No, I support that separately because I wanted to suggest another sentence, but the committee will advise whether I'm not looking at that particular issue. Because I was not finished when I was proposing it. We continue discussing that the DTI should disperse incentives to companies and entities that show interest to assist governments to achieve its national goals and national priorities, especially in the area of radical economic transformation.
Well, this has been on the table.
The committee welcomes the fact that the DTI unqualified as teachers. Okay, we say most things, okay, most of the things, and excluding this, receive a clean audit. And so we've also got to put, receive an unqualified and clean audit. You see, an unqualified is the technical one and clean audit. This is a result of X. Now, I want to get to 6.10, the committee. And you just hear now, we come back to where we had it, Honourable MacPherson, becoming the committee welcomed the work of the NRDS in terms of improving the time it takes to read. My apologies. With what, sorry?
No, I'm struggling. I'm not coming with this people in audit. I'm not going to say the right language to use the parable. But it's unqualified with no emphasis on no matter of empathy. Is it correct to call this
yes.
Clean audit?
It's a technical term. It's a technical term that the auditor general himself uses.
Not correct though, that's how they mean. It means an audit with no findings. That is, as is one thing, and then they would say commonly, colloquially, referred to as a clean audit. But a correct term to use is without findings.
No. What they'll do is, as a footer, Ms. Sheldon, you'll put what clean audit means. All right, Ms. Sheldon, right. All noted. No, but we're supposed to be looking out for these things as well. Right. This is an authority. However, this process should not compromise the need to protect consumers from unsafe products and local industry from competition from illegal imports or imports not complying with the necessary technical requirements and compulsory specs. 6.11. The committee welcomes the progress made by the NRCS in terms of addressing findings of the Auditor General. However, it raised concerns with continued irregular expenditure as well as fruitless and wasteless and wasteful expenditure. 6.12, this is just the swing around in terms of the grammar here. A number of the entities have ICT infrastructure challenges. Full stop. A number of the entities, including NRCS, have ICT infrastructure challenges. Full stop. The NCR inherited a legacy system of X, so on. And you end with an intellectual property registration office. Take the NRCS's author among it, you've already included them. The committee, new sentence, raised concerns related to the ICT infrastructure as the NRCS is moving towards with an S, an automated system for some of its processes. The committee encouraged the NRCS to address the ICT challenges to ensure the smooth operation in the entity and to avoid the challenges it had experienced previously. 6.13, the subsidy's innovative efforts to create the accessibility to the public is welcome, as well as the collaborative efforts with the Department of Home Affairs, South African Revenue Services, Transnet and Banks, among others. Similar collaborative work is necessary across other government departments and entities to reduce the cost and increase the ease of doing business. 6.14, although the committee welcomed the progress made by SIPSI to stabilise its labour relations, it encouraged the SIPSI to address critical vacancies that could negatively impact on a service delivery. 6.15, the committee remains concerned about the SIPSI's continued heavy reliance on service providers for the operation and maintenance of its core IT systems. It urged the SIPSI to finalized analysis of a possible move to in-house maintenance of such systems. 616, the committee welcomed the contribution by the company's tribunal with respect to alternative dispute resolution. It encouraged affected parties to bring matters related to the contravention of the Companies Act for consideration to this institution. 617, the company's tribunal should consider improving its ICT system. We now, though, have 620, as you recall. Now we're going to simply go back quickly to 6.3. All right? We had passed some of these already. There was no problem, just as you were going out there, Honourable MacPherson. Do you remember? 6.3. We had no problem with that first one, 6.3. If I'm not mistaken, that was yours.
Yeah.
Right? It stays. I then thought I would just, as Chair, proposed the 6.41, which related to the dogs issue. Is that all right? Looking at people?
Yes.
The 6.5, we have, and I'm going to do it in sections. The committee welcomes the information from the DG that only recently companies are expected to meet. Not only just with that recently, companies are expected to meet at least BEE level 4 requirements for the NSEC. First part. Do we welcome that? Yes. Next one. However, it is of the firm view, that's the committee, that the DTI should use incentives as an instrument to foster transformation of the economy as well as its other programs. Full stop. Okay? Right. Last sentence. The DTI should disperse incentives to companies and entities that show interest to support to assist government to achieve its national goals and priorities, especially in the area of radical economic transformation. That is the last... What happened? No, comment.
Right. Sorry, that is our comment. What's the problem there? Oh, this is tricky. As well as its other programs. Now, with that last sentence, the DTI should disperse incentives on a woman person.
It's repetitive. It's repetitive. You say, however, it is of the third view that the DTI should use incentives as an instrument to foster transformation in the economy. At the end of the day, the DTI should distribute incentives to companies and entities to assist government to achieve its goals in the area of radical economic transformation. It should be saying it differently.
All right, I'll get some opinion.
Chair,
I think
we've
got some opinions.
Honourable Mr. Hazen. Yeah, thank you. I actually one or two or three actually recommendations that I wrote down.
Where are they,
Honourable Mr. Hazen? When we edit it, I'll think that's on the next.
All right. But no comment here. I'm just asking you again, Honourable Mr. Hazen. You can see what's going up there. No comment. No. Right. Honourable Mkongi. You stand, is it?
Yes, it was I stand. We're looking at different kind of the same. If you, the second sentence speaks about the national priorities of the state, and then the first one talks to the task of the DTI as a government department, because if you look at the written report, the area there where we spoke about the objectives of the DTI, and also we spoke about the work of the DTI in the national goals. We have put it in there. So that is why I separated the rules.
All right. What I'd like to do, if I may, I'm going to make a proposal, because later on, when these things are discussed further on, separate point, the VTI should disperse and send to the system, expecting the state aspect to accompany the state to show interest.
Sorry. To show interest. We're separating it. There's got another point. Right. Now I'm going to only hear from you, Honourable Engelbrecht, to tell me. Yes, Satan. Sorry about that. Honourable Engelbrecht is a very good fellow, too. Now, let's just hear where your point is coming. On the tweet, where would you like to put it? You can see much overhead there.
Do my...
Now, let me just deal with yourself, yes?
See, I just were consistent on some of the things that as we went through on pages 24, 25, actually further to something you said.
Sorry,
I think my input would be just for pages 24, 25, something that you said, I'm thinking of Prapa or one. One revised the structure of the DDIs that have optimally structured.
Let me just stop you there for a minute. You know, I'm alarmed, but Honourable Everhazen, you're supposed to be making the input as we go along, you see. But let's try to be flexible. You are new to the committee. Page 24. Whereabouts on page 24? Quickly now, whereabouts?
This is just not specifically, it's just things that I've put up as we spoke. This is recommendations, if I can maybe... Name the recommendations, or if there's no time left, maybe tomorrow.
Just read it.
My recommendations is firstly, number one, to revise the structure of the DTI so that it's optimally structured and correctly staffed to deliver on its mandate. Two, ensure that the DTI and the board of its entities are staffed by individuals that have the correct technical skills to execute their responsibilities. And three, strengthen the oversight functions of the DGI and this committee, not only in terms of the financial oversight, but in terms of the execution of key projects.
Right. Now, let me see something that could be helpful. When you come to your first one about the structure optimally staffed, we have got several points in the conclusion referring to this. What we can put in there is that in a phrase here on that day, Ms. Hurley, Ms. Sheldon, Ms. Yes, ma'am. If you go there to the staffing issues asked, you can put in a general overarching one of staff. Overarching, when you come to the end of all the entities, etc., and you're looking at tribunal, and you come to 621, you point out that with respect to the staff, that the committee welcomes the progress made in addressing the vacancies, but wishes to emphasize the importance of strategically skilled staff. You see what I'm capturing? Strategically skilled staff. Being at the employment of strategically skilled staff. The next one, the progress of that. Now, where's your other one now that you had about optimum and everything? Just let me see this recommendation here, quickly from Mark. What is it? Yeah, we are. Revise the structure so that strengthen the oversight. You see, the fact of the matter is you're talking to us about our committee. We must do this. We can't talk to ourselves in a recommendation, you see. You know, we must become more analytical. We must do that ourselves as a committee. This was we want to tell the department what to do, not ourselves. We must correct ourselves in our end of the year report. So we are going to put that in, and that needs to come in there. That's the proposal I have for you, Honourable Yesterhaven. Let me look at the committee. You know, I always like to take the grievance list of the parties. Honourable Kalako, would that be okay with the staff wash issue, Honourable Kalako?
No, you find the chair.
Honourable McPherson,
Now, before you close, because I thought I was going to add something from what my honorable magistrate has proposed on our 6.3. We discussed it, but it's not included.
No, we're not going to include another recommendation, as it will go to conclusion.
Oh, I thought my
uncle... No, no, no. It's taken out of recommendations into inclusion. It's right, conclusion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can I read it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wanted to propose, as I mentioned, the committee commends the department for providing strategic leadership in ensuring that South Africa is included as the beneficiary to ACOA.
Well, actually, you know, the AGOA was quite an achievement. We've already sent, we've already got it. 6.7. Yeah, it happened.
All right, no need terminal power.
Well, that's because I was actually on the phone with the minister, and we also discussed the WTO at the moment. But I think we did would, because again, was, as I indicated, it was in discussions with Roman on this issue. They both now agree that the technical people, that both sides are exercising political pressure on the vets of both sides to conclude it. So, as I said, I think we should, and it is correct, as I said, the ministry is completely hands-on on the thing of securing it in the government. As I said, and as I said, responding directly on everything from even interfering in the VETS program to conclude this matter. So I think that these are really welcome if we do have that in.
Right, on that basis, and thank you all of you. I know in way past the 5 minutes, I apologize. I want to propose this formally, and indicate you've got it overhead. My policy will be, as always, once this is printed, to sign it off and to give the leader of each party and members a copy. Do you want to come in here on the next version?
Chair wants to make a recommendation following on the conclusions that we've received. And you'll recall the discussions that we've had with annual reports, that a concern was that the targets are exceptionally low. It's two of this and one of that. And what I'd like to propose as a recommendation is that the department increases the performance targets which are linked to job creation. Because it can't be that an entity meets its performance target by having two roadshows and four meetings. That contributes absolutely nothing to job creation in this country. And so our recommendation is that we capture the essence that performance targets for entities must be linked to job creation.
You know, there's only one problem there. I don't know, 3 years ago or four, I wanted every job, actually fixed for the EG, who's the current EG, still there. And, now I want to know that all these jobs, that one, that one, and here, and here, and here, and here, I think you're remembering your speech, you know. The challenge is, we didn't give these jobs. We gave funds, we supported the company creating the jobs. Government doesn't create the jobs. It develops an enabling environment for companies to create the jobs. And the only way the Auditor General will accept a job, is with a tiny number on it. Yes, have the jobs. These are them. So, it's a moot point, but it's something I am aware of, and I'm the first to make the mistake, and I say, government created jobs. Government develops an enabling environment in which jobs are created. We don't create them, you see. And I think we've got to just be wary of that one. So all our policies are to ensure job creation. But for us to say to Lima Brothers, for example,
that one came up. That, by the way, you said, how many jobs are you going to create? They said, some. Month by month, how are you creating them? Companies don't work like that. They just don't work like that. So some of the jobs are phased in a lot later. That is my own view. If you want to comment from the DG on the issue of job creation and incentives from the DPI, welcome to comment, DG.
Yes, I would want to suggest that in terms of 8.1, given the earlier discussion and even the recommendation from Honourable Pearson, we shouldn't, we should say strengthen the incentive program. You see, because when you start doing reviews, then people, as you know, people want to not have this incentive program because they, so it's just to strengthen, not a review. And then I think what we can add is have, I think the content of Honourable MacPherson's point is, we can then in that sentence say, and ensure the incentive programs have a maximum impact on job creation. So I think we have, the only difficulty we have is you cannot link, as I said, we get massive amount of jobs. We take the clothing program, right? That industry employs about 70,000 people. We've completely saved those 70,000 jobs and we've increased those jobs. In the automotive sector, the sector employs 50,000 people in the automotive assembly industry, 70,000 in components, and another 200,000 in retail. So the DTI's programs is solely that 300,000 jobs in autos is solely the result of the government's program. So we are saying we are having it, but what you can't do is in a specific program, because the DTI is not the employer. Obviously, you're saying I must create 10 jobs, I can do it if it's on my payroll, right? But I can't say, if Unilever comes to me or Mercedes-Benz says I'm producing the next model C-Class, they will dictate, all they will ask is for the incentive. We must give them the incentive. Whether they employ the 150 or 180 people is their decision. So I'm just saying, but on the whole, what we will ensure is that we create an automotive industry which will create jobs. So you can't, as I said, we can't say to BMW, no, you only give the incentive, you create 200 jobs. And then we like I gave the example of the ice cream plant. You need to be employing 200 people directly in the incentive, but it has massive downstream implications, like creating 2,000 jobs in terms of vendors. But in terms of, it will reflect on our program, it will reflect 200 jobs for MSEP, for 12i. But as I indicated, but we have to give it, so the only thing we can control is to give them the amount of capital investment. But I think the overall impact of our programs is only job creation. The only reason we give them the incentives is for people to employ people.
We are. Yes, Honourable
MacPherson. Thank you, DG. I certainly appreciate the point, and I certainly appreciate the idea that it is business that creates jobs and not government that creates jobs. Government supports businesses to create jobs. But I think the nexus of my recommendation is, I vaguely remember that when we sat with the committee, and it was a particular entity, and I can't remember which one it was, e.g., that just had the most ridiculous targets. It was embarrassing to see such low targets for entity that should be doing such important work. And what I'm trying to do is trying to say, how do we up the game of our entities, get them to do more with less, and contribute to the enabling environment, specifically the regulatory entities that fall within the DGR.
Thank you very much. Now, we're closing off here. I just want you to hear with
it's a critical issue. I agree with the principle that all programs and centers must have job creation as its target. But I was just saying, but you cannot put it in the performance target of, for example, the NCRS to say create 20 jobs. You can't have that because they can only create their own jobs. But by doing their regulations effectively, they create
many other jobs where I'm saying performance targets must be under your control for you to be held accountable. So the only way GTI must be having accountability for spending is full incentive budget. That's the only thing we have control of.
Yeah.
We must try to, and I really emphasize it to our staff, 100% zero underspending. As I said, but that can only be, the thing under our control is the grant of incentive. So I'm saying the performance staff mustn't have, it's just a technical issue.
I want to hand over, you know, just to hear what Ronald Pilato is saying. Because initially I had said that a large just recommendation should go into conclusion. But let me ask the Honourable Pilato now just for the last word.
No, sir, I wanted just to clear up. So what we are talking about, in fact, is currently in the point of the report, where the consent of all the members of the committee was, I think it's NCC.
Yeah.
And NCR. They set targets. We're not saying they must set targets without spending from outside. Their own targets. They set their targets and fight to achieve, and they achieve more than that. And we're saying, based on your performance of this, which I'm representing, to arrive at what is raised. And they must actually look at increasing their targets because they are giving them in any issue. We're talking about them, not about something which is external. It's captured in their way.
So, certainly, Honourable Pilato, so what we're going to do is, you know, we don't want an underperforming purely because targets are lower than is necessary. Someone said, it may have been yourself, Honourable Ackerson, about upping the game, etc. We can do so far. Let's improve the performance even more. And that is now captured. On that basis, members, I want to put the report before you. I want to propose someone. I want to ask who can propose the adoption of this report as is. Amendments.
Chair, I'm moving for adoption of the report with the amendments.
Right, Honourable Pilato proposes a moves the report with the amendments for adoption, seconded by Honourable Mkongi.
Yes.
Right, now we need to come, Mr. Minister. Right. Seconded by Williams, Honourable Williams, because of presence of people during certain meetings. Thank you. And then having of that, we now raise the first issue. Yes, Honourable McPherson.
Chairperson, you will appreciate as in all processes like this, that the DA will abstain until we have a mandate from our party on the BRRR rules.
The DA is abstaining. Do we have any other comments from parties? No. So we have here a proposal to move by Honourable Clarke, seconded by the Honourable Williams, the abstention of Honourable McPherson. On that note, I would like to thank in particular yourself, Honourable Yesterhaven. You know, you're here on your own having to track things for your commit party, and you re-emphasized really strategically the issue that is overarching. Thank you very much. I want to thank yourself, Honourable McPherson, for also the comments and the additions you've made, the Honourable Mpongi, and all of the committee members for the input. And again, thank you, Honourable Kalaka, for producing the report for this position. Thank you very much. Honourable members, the meeting is adjourned until 8:30 tomorrow morning in V119. Thank you. That is the bill. Please bring all documentation, all of it. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. I think you'll be very interested. Cheers.